Hi, everybody. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life through conversations with the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. First, let's thank our sponsors, Le Cordon Bleu. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. And let's thank Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs. Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs are better than cage-free. They are bull-free. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. And Bob's Red Mill. Bob's Red Mill is an employee-owned company that's been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. You know with Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you are getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. Go to bobsredmill.com and use the code CHERRYBOMB25 for 25% off your order. All right, we have some housekeeping. Radio Cherry Bomb is on tour. So far, we've been to Chicago, Detroit, and Dallas. It's been amazing to meet so many members of the Bomb Squad and hear from so many incredible women. But the fun is not over yet. Tonight, we are in Birmingham. That is November 15th at The Essential, and we'll be talking to different women to find out what the food scene is like in the Magic City. And then on Sunday, we head down to New Orleans to talk to Kristen Essig of Coquette, Joy the Baker, and others at the Ace Hotel. If you live in those cities and want to hear an episode of Radio Cherry Bomb recorded live, now is your chance. Tickets are still available on cherrybomb.com. So don't forget, Birmingham tonight, and then New Orleans on Sunday. I'm very excited. If you can't meet us on the road, don't worry. We'll be releasing each stop as part of a very special Radio Cherry Bomb mini-series later this year. A huge thank you to our sponsor, Kerrygold, for making all of this happen. The very final stop, nobody knows this yet, I think, but it's Seattle on December 1st. We will be going to Book Larder, one of our favorite places. It's one of the places we kicked off the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour, so I'm really thrilled to be going back to Seattle. And we will have some very special guests. And if you go to the Book Larder website, you can snag a ticket right now. Today's guest is Michelle Johnson. Some of you might know Michelle as the chocolate barista on Instagram. Michelle's been working to shed light on the lack of diversity in the coffee scene. She started a special live event called Black Coffee, where she and baristas and coffee shop owners discuss the specialty coffee scene and what needs to change. She's held them in Portland, New York City, and Washington, D.C. I was really excited to have Michelle on the show because she and I have kind of been email pen pals for the last year. So it was really wonderful to chat with her in person and hear how she got started on the coffee scene and how she came to be doing what she's doing. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did, and we will be right back after this word from Le Cordon Bleu. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. I am so excited to be here with you, Michelle, because we have been pen pals for so many months now. I really forgot that we had never met.
Yeah. I haven't been to New York in over a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what do you think? Has it changed dramatically?
It's still just as busy. As soon as I land here, I always immediately get stressed out, but like a good type of stressed.
I'm stressed out all the time in New York. Why? So you spend time in Portland. I feel like Portland's as caffeinated, if not more caffeinated, but But they're way more chill.
Way more. I think it's because of the recreational marijuana.
I was going to say that. I didn't want to make assumptions, but I was going to say.
No, it's definitely that.
Is it the up and the down?
And the trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the trees. I mean, the air.
It's beautiful.
I don't want to lump Portland and Seattle. I know that's like an obnoxious New York thing to do. But the air in Portland and the air in Seattle, it's not the same. We do not breathe the same air.
I like to call Portland my side piece. I would never marry the side piece, so I will never move to Portland permanently, but I will go there for like 3 months at a time and hang out just on the low, very quietly, and then leave.
It's got to be good for everything, your lungs, the soul, your brain. So you had said, we were having lunch, and you're like, how did you find me? And I was like, I have no idea. I think it might have been we were going to Portland on the Radio Cherry Bomb tour earlier this year. And I realized we did not have a single coffee person on the panel or speaking. And I was like, all right, you can't roll into Portland and not have somebody representing the coffee scene. So I just started looking up like women in the coffee scene and fell down that Google rabbit hole and found you. And then I think I'd missed you by like...
Was it a week or something?
Yeah, real bummer. But you had just been there, and was it the first of the Black Coffee programs?
Mm-hmm.
So we have so much to unpack here. Let's start with you, Michelle. No, let's start with the chocolate barista. How did the chocolate barista become a thing?
Well, I started the chocolate barista in January of 2016. I was still working as a barista in Phoenix, Arizona at the time. And Phoenix has it's a big city, but it also is kind of has a small town feel to it. So a lot of its communities are like very intertwined and close to each other. So one of the communities that overlapped with the coffee scene was the creative community. So I had a lot of friends who were photographers, bloggers, influencers, and things like that. And I was like, I want to do that, but I'm a barista, so I want to make this like blog that's about my barista lifestyle. And I was like, well, I'm the only Black person here, so I'm going to be the chocolate barista.
And the name just popped in your head?
Yeah. I think it was someone else had said it sort of as a joke, but I was like, that kind of has a ring to it, so I'm going to keep it. And at first, I tried to start it like a year before, and I was in college, so I was like, oh, this will be about community and coffee and college. Then I dropped out of college. So I was like, this will just be about coffee and community. I grew up in D.C., in the D.C. area.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born in Northern Virginia.
And then how did you wind up in Phoenix?
It's sort of like a dart at the map type of situation. I visited when I was like 18 or 19 years old. One of my friends I grew up with used to go to Arizona State. So I randomly went to visit her and had a great time. And back then, there was nothing in Phoenix. And so I have no idea how I latched on and was like, yeah, this is the place for me. But I did. And it took a couple of years for me to move there. But in that time, I'd gotten into coffee, become a barista, started to get really into that. And I was like, you know, no matter where I move, because I didn't want to stay in D.C., I was like, at least I can be a barista anywhere. Like, this is a skill set that I can take anywhere. When I was just researching what was going on in Phoenix, there wasn't that much going on. So I was like, not only can I just go there and, you know, be a good barista, but I can probably, you know, help build the community there, do something. So when I got there, that's exactly what I did.
So how did you become a barista? Because that's a big part of what you talk about, that the coffee world is not really open to people of color.
Right. I've always loved coffee. My mom drinks it. She drinks Maxwell House. It's like a little bit of coffee and mostly milk and sugar, but that's how I grew up drinking it. I remember being 4 years old, like stealing sips of her coffee because it just tasted so sweet. And I have four younger siblings, so she would go away to tend to them.
Yeah. I'm the oldest of five.
Well, here we go. But she would go tend to them, and I would like run in the kitchen and like steal a couple sips and then run away.
And your mom was like, why is this kid bouncing off the walls?
Exactly. And why is my coffee gone? But as I got older, she used to like make coffee for the both of us, especially when I was in high school. So then in high school, I found out that Starbucks was a thing. Tried to get a job there. They never hired me. Y'all messed up. You should have did that.
They have time to make up for it, Michelle.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that.
I do need health insurance. After high school, I was living with my aunt in Maryland. And me and my cousin were like out in like the part of DC and Maryland that's like the Chevy Chase neighborhood. And we were just job hunting and I saw a coffee shop and I was like, oh, I kind of want to walk in there. And she was like, why don't you? And I was like, I'm too shy. And I was very shy back then. She literally like grabbed my hand and walked me into the coffee shop and was like, ask the manager for a job. So I did. I had an interview the next week and I was just like, look, I don't know how to make coffee, but I love this. And I'm just super enthusiastic and like ready to, you know, get dirty and like figure out how to make this thing that I've been drinking my entire life. And they were like, all right. So they hired me on the spot and I became obsessed. I like made flashcards for all of the terminology, all of the recipes. Like I used to dream about it.
Wait, you could sell that. Seriously. I feel like so many people. Yeah. I feel like so many people either want to be baristas or just be better.
Or like know how to order at a coffee shop. Yeah, because that is a lot of like stress that people hold is like walking to a coffee shop and like, I don't know how to order. And most of the time the barista is going to like have an attitude about you being up at the register and not knowing what it is that you want. It's like, that's not the customer's fault. Right. I should make flashcards.
You should. Because also, it's just such a great training tool. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the people who apply at my coffee shop, Smith Canteen, they aren't trained baristas, but they just love coffee.
Yeah.
And so you're in this tough spot as an owner. You're like, okay, I need to find some actual baristas, but I love this kid and their energy, mm-hmm. and I would love to bring them on board.
Yeah. Give me a year.
Give me a year? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But definitely. But yeah, I just became obsessed with it. And I left that job. I actually got fired after a couple of months, but that's fine. Because then a year later, I got another barista job and it was my first specialty coffee job. And it was through a counterculture account. And from then on, it was just like the rabbit hole opened up into a chasm and I went falling.
In a good way.
In a good way.
In a good way. Shout out to counterculture.
Yeah, shout out.
They are the Smith Canteen coffee provider, and they have been very patient with this newbie coffee shop owner.
Yeah.
As I get my footing, and they're getting used to the emergency texts. Like, do you have any baristas? This is the second thing you can start. There needs to be like a task rabbit for baristas.
Do they not have like apps for that here?
I don't think so.
They do in Australia, where you can just like pull up an app and like, I need a barista to cover this shift this day, and they'll send somebody.
Okay, could you please start that?
Yeah.
just start writing down. Jess, write down all these ideas.
Yeah. Bring this to New York.
Coffee flashcards.
Yeah.
One of those. Yeah, no, we need that badly because it's just the nature of the beast, like bartending, mm-hmm. being a barista. Like it does attract a lot of creative people.
Right.
And they... You know, they're going on auditions, they're doing all these things, and they don't really have control over their schedule, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't want to stand in the way of a part or a cool gig or something.
Right.
So we need that.
Definitely. There, it has to, I know it exists in the U.S., but we'll figure something out for New York.
Okay. I would love that.
Definitely.
Okay. So coffee, you fall down that chasm.
Yep.
After that,
I found out that barista competitions existed. My boss told me that, and I was like... So you're telling me this thing that I know I'm already good at, I can go to a competition and get extra validation that I am good at it. Good. I'm on my way. And at that point, I was like, one day I'm going to do barista competitions. And I started out with latte art throwdowns, and those were really fun. And that's when I learned that there was like a community around coffee. And I'd never like hung out with other baristas from other coffee shops. And the DC coffee community is very tight knit. So I started going to latte art throwdowns and like seeing people and meeting them.
A latte art throwdown.
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
That is baristas going head to head, pouring their best latte art. And it's just like a knockout round, like bracket system all the way to the top. And they do them all the time.
Love it.
It is such a waste.
It sounds like fun. It's like
it's fun, but it's such a waste of milk.
It's a waste of milk.
It's a huge waste
of milk. Well, think about sports. Like guys are bashing each other's heads in. That's a waste of brain cells.
Yeah.
So no different.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But they are fun. So from there, after about a year, I decided I was going to finally move to Arizona. So I moved to Arizona and I start working at this coffee shop that was like the coffee shop in the city. And they took coffee a lot more seriously than my last job. So I was like, okay, this will be where I can finally like do competitions. And the community in Phoenix at the time was very like cliquish and separated. it was like, oh, you work at, you know, you work at Cartel. Like, oh, we don't really talk to people at Cartel. Or like, oh, you work at Echo. Like, it's like, oh, I think this is kind of weird because it's not what I was used to in DC. Like, everyone was super close. And the other thing I wasn't used to, I thought DC's community is very diverse. I grew up in the community having like Black baristas as my coworkers, managers, like, you know, people of just like all different shapes, colors, whatever. And then I moved to Arizona and it was so white.
And you did not, no one told you.
And I did not realize it until I got there. And I was like, ooh, okay, but this is fine. So that was when I first started to realize that there may be a diversity problem. That at first, you know, at the time, I just thought it was Arizona. But as I started to do more, you know, events that required the whole national community, I was like, okay, it's not just Arizona. But that was the second thing. But I started with just trying to get the community together. And I would go to all of the, you know, latte art events and different community events. And I just started hanging out with people at all the other coffee shops. I was like, you know, I don't need to just hang out with the people at mine. I want to find out what everyone's doing because we can help each other and we can build each other up and encourage each other. And I don't understand why you wouldn't want to do that. So then after a while, I just became like, I don't know, a beacon of the community. It's weird talking about it and like talking about myself in this way, but it's true. It's just, I just became like the community advocate for Phoenix, especially when I finally did my first barista competition, actually this weekend, 4 years ago. My routine was about community and about how like Phoenix is just such a great place for it and that people need to stop overlooking Phoenix. And I was like, just you wait, in a few years, this is going to be the spot. We're still waiting for it. But I know Phoenix is on its way. Yeah, it's just I started to help put together events. And there was this guy named Braden that I worked with putting together like a huge like coffee swap where we just had everyone come. And it's like bring whatever bags of coffee you want and just swap with people. We were all brewing together. We did cuppings. I was always visiting coffee shops.
What's a cupping?
Oh, coffee cupping is just a big tasting. And you have a very special soup spoon and you do a very obnoxious slurp. When you taste the coffee so that it like aerates and covers all of your mouth so you can get all of the tasting notes. And I feel a way about tasting notes in coffee. I think people take it too seriously and they sound like wankers when they're just like, oh, this tastes like, I get hints of elderflower and lychee, or is it lychee? I don't know. I don't even know what that tastes
like. It's like wine, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like wine,
sure, there are a lot of parallels.
There are a lot of parallels in that. And like wine's fine because at least it gets you drunk. But with coffee, with coffee, I'm just like, I understand and I get it. Obviously, like I am a coffee professional, so I understand that language and I'm about it. But when it comes to trying to meet people where they are, like the general consumer, they're just going to kind of look at you like, girl, what are you saying? So I'm like, you know what? This coffee tastes like if you were just waking up on a Saturday morning and the sun's out and it's like 70 degrees and you're chilling on your balcony and you're just like chilling with your cat. And it's like really nice. Like this is the coffee you're going to want for that.
I can relate to that. Minus the balcony.
Yeah. Right.
Totally.
Or it's just like, oh, this coffee is like, it's winter time and it's cold. And it's a little bit rainy out. And like you want something a little bit heavier, a little bit chocolatier, something that like you can snuggle up with. Like this coffee tastes like that. Like that's how I like to talk about coffee. Because like there are a lot of...
You go right for the emotion.
Yeah, exactly.
So
straight for the emotion, relatable
emotion.
Things. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of tasting notes that I don't know what they taste like. Like I, you know, grew up in a specific socioeconomic class where it's just like, I don't know what elderflower tastes like or smells like. I didn't know what passion fruit tasted like until I moved to Australia. And it's just like, you can get a bag of passion fruits for $2. And I was like, and I didn't even know they looked weird on the inside, but they're delicious.
So I love passion
fruit.
They're
so good.
But again,
good.
I didn't have passion fruit until I was like, I don't know, 30 something.
And like this year, I think passion fruit is the tasting note of the year in coffee because I see it on every coffee bag. And I'm like, I don't know if it was Drake or, but that is my favorite song. Such a good song. But yeah.
I want to go back because when you started the Chocolate Barista, mm-hmm. you did not have a social mission in
mind. I did not, yeah.
You were not about social justice or racial equality or...
It was just like me doing my thing, which I... So I always had the plan of eventually talking about my experience being Black in the coffee industry, because that is a part of my lifestyle. Like, that's something that I can't separate myself from. But it wasn't going to be my entire thing. So when it came around time for me to, when I did post that blog, it's called The Black Cup of Excellence, Being Black in Specialty Coffee. I was on a business trip in Dallas, and by at this point, I had stopped being a barista, and I was working for a creative agency. So we were on a business trip in Dallas, and I stayed up for 3 nights from like 10 to 6 a.m. just writing this blog.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, because you drank so much coffee.
No. I didn't have, I was drinking wine, drinking a lot of wine, and writing all night for 3 nights straight, writing this blog post. I wanted it to be good, and I wanted it to be thorough. And I was, like, I didn't just talk about my experience, but I, like, you know, pulled opinions and stats about, like, why there weren't a lot of Black people in coffee, or why people thought Black people didn't drink coffee. And I want to do a part two, now that I think about it. It's been a couple years. But when I finally wrote it, my friend was editing it, and he was like, well... Now you know that you're going to have to just, like, talk about this all the time. And I was like, no. It's like, what are you talking about? He's like, if you're going to do this, like, you're going to cross, you know, into a threshold that this is something you need to talk about. And, like, you are the best person to do it. And I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of scared. And I was very scared. I was even scared to post it. But I did, and it blew up. It just completely, just within a day, like, so many people were sharing it. A lot of people were talking about it. A lot of people reaching out to me. That's how I met a lot of the friends that I have today. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is not what I was expecting. And I was like, I guess I do have to talk about this now. But over time, you know, it offered a lot of opportunities for me to talk about it more and to get more comfortable with it and to, you know, be reading more and learning about what, like, what activists are doing in other industries and just in general. And then I was like, well, I guess I can be an activist in coffee. That's fine. And since then, it's just kind of evolved into this whole, like, I've done talks all over the world. I just got back from Norway doing a talk about this. I went to this event called the Nordic Roasters Forum, and it is a roasters competition for roasteries in the Nordic countries. And they, you know, usually the talks are very technical and talking a lot about roasting and green coffee buying and things like that. But this year, the theme was sustainability. And it wasn't just like producer sustainability, like sustainability with roasting and things like that, but also workplace sustainability. So me and my really good friend Tamika, we both were the workplace sustainability talks, and ours played very well off of each other, where I just kind of gave an intro into how do we change thinking about accessibility to coffee education and sharing information, and not just the typical, like, this is how you make a cappuccino information, or this is how you roast coffee, but how can we equip and empower our coffee staff to learn about marketing or to learn about operations? Because those are positions that a lot of coffee companies are starting to hire for, but, you know, can't necessarily afford to hire like marketing professionals from other industries. But coffee is so unique in a way where it's like you kind of need to know what's going on within the industry to be able to market it, because its client base is so specific. And just the way the industry works is so different than everything else. So I gave a talk on that, and then she gave a talk on just like why diversity is just going to be so important for people to really make a priority in your business, not just for the bottom line and you're, you know, making money, but you want to keep people. And, you know, she made a very valid point where it's like a lot of, you know, women of color and other ethnic minorities will leave companies mostly because the environment just wasn't empowering to them and was not good for them. And they're not going to tell you that. But 9 times out of 10, like, that's the reason. That's been the reason why I've left every one of my jobs except for the one when I moved to Phoenix.
So you have the chocolate barista.
Mm-hmm.
That's evolving.
Yeah.
But then you decide you're going to do black coffee.
Yes.
Tell us what black coffee is.
So black coffee is a live podcast, and I gather several Black coffee professionals and we just get together on a stage and talk about our experiences working in the industry. And the first one was in Portland in April. And it's produced by Sprudge, who have been very supportive of me and the Chocolate Barista for years now. And yeah, we just gathered and like had, it was such a fun time. It felt like having a conversation just like with my friends, which was the point. It was less about, you know, teaching the audience anything. It was more just, let's just have this cathartic conversation about our experiences. Very uncensored, very just like candid. And if people, you know, people will learn something from it, but that's not necessarily the point. It's really for us. The conversation is for us and by us. And now I have two more Black coffees coming up, one in New York and one in D.C., and they both have themes with them. So the New York one will be about longevity in the industry and why we don't see a lot of Black coffee professionals stay long. Or for the ones that do stay a while, like, what is it that you've had to go through, or like, what has kept you in it for this long? So everyone in it has been in the industry for like 8 or more years. And then the DC show is about, specifically about the DC coffee community. And like I said before, it's very diverse. It's very tight knit. And I didn't realize there was a diversity problem until I left. So it's like, what is it about DC that has set it apart? Why is it that, you know, the coffee community actually reflects the population that's there? What's something that other cities can take from it, but also what more can DC be doing to help continue to cultivate this?
How are you planning and organizing these events? It's not, as someone who's like a professional event planner now, I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of the footage from the Portland one. Mm-hmm. I watched the video. If anyone's like truly interested in what Michelle's talking about, and I hope you all are, there's a great YouTube video of the whole conversation I really think you should listen to. But then I saw some other footage from it, and it just looked great. It looked like everyone was having a good time. But
it was so much
It was
fun.
Not a small thing that you put together.
Mm-mm. And it was like the added difficulty was living in Australia and trying to plan an event that's going to be in the U.S. Everyone who I'm talking to is in the U.S., like getting up at 6 a.m. to have video calls and doing phone calls every few weeks. And, you know, Sprudge's, like, they did a lot of the legwork on the production side of things and, like, getting sponsors and making sure we had all the equipment we needed. And me as a creative director, I just focused mostly on, like, building the panel, building the content, what are we talking about, and then just, like, other fun things, like, this is the photographer I want to have to come, you know, take pictures of the event, or like this DJ and stuff like that. But it worked really well together. But doing two of them at the same time, and Spreads just also dropped a book called The New Rules of Coffee,
which I can't wait to get my
hands on.
It
is so good.
Sprudge, for people who don't know what that is, it's sort of, if you know Eater, Sprudge is like the Eater of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. I also write for them. You should read my
articles.
Oh, you do?
I didn't realize that.
Okay. I have several feature pieces on there.
I missed that. I'm going to catch. I have some catching up to do.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Michelle after a word from our sponsors. Does this happen to you? You need a dozen eggs. You go to the supermarket. You head to the egg section, and you are so confused by what you find there, you freeze. You want nice eggs on hand because maybe you want a cheese and herb omelet for dinner, or you want to poach an egg to slip on your avocado toast, and you know quality eggs make a big difference. And you're a decent person, so it's important the chickens have a good life. But as you stand there, you think to yourself, I have no idea what all these words on the egg cartons mean. So you shrug, pick one, and continue shopping. Stop right there. You are a busy lady. You don't need this bullshit in your life. You need bullshit-free eggs, which is where Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs come in. Their pasture-raised hens roam outside in 108 square feet of space per hen. Those cage-free hens, they never go outside. I tasted the difference once I tried Vital Farms eggs. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. It's time for our Bob's Red Mill Minute. We're here with Jess Zeidman, our intern and associate radio producer. Hi, Jess.
Hi, Carrie.
Tell everybody what we are talking about today.
Today, we are talking about cornbread.
because Gabby at Smith Canteen made some maple walnut cornbread recently, and Jess could not stop talking about it.
I am obsessed with this cornbread. It is the best cornbread I have ever had in my life, and I ate a lot of cornbread growing up.
You did? Did you make it from scratch?
Yeah, we made it from scratch. We would make big sheets of it and have it with like chili and soup.
Yum.
Yeah, it's great. Cornbread's delicious.
Well, Gabby made our cornbread with Bob's Red Mill stone ground organic cornmeal. If you don't want to make it totally from scratch, Bob's Red Mill also has a wonderful cornbread muffin mix. It's made with a blend of stone ground whole wheat pastry flour, stone ground cornmeal, cane sugar, sweet cream buttermilk powder, sea salt, and baking powder. Jess, if you need to get some organic stone ground cornmeal or the cornbread muffin mix from Bob's Red Mill, what do you do?
Oh, I would log on to bobsredmill.com and at checkout, I'd use the code CHERRYBOMB25 for 25% off my order.
It's a great deal. So make sure you do that. Like Jess said, go to Bob's Red Mill, CHERRYBOMB25 for 25% off your order. Because you know with Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you're getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. So I have so many things I want to talk to you about. Why is coffee so white? What happened?
Colonization. Like, honestly, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things, one of the many things in food and beverage where it's the origins of it may be in black and brown communities. And then just over time, like, you know, white people just take it and are just like, oh, we're going to gentrify it, basically, whether it's on purpose or not. And now it's sort of seen as just this like status thing. It's like, oh, to go get coffee every day, go get your daily latte. It's just become this. I think it, in some ways, it's stemmed from, or maybe this stereotype has stemmed from it, of like the white girl in the yoga pants going to Starbucks. Like, that's sort of like the whole thing. And that's just like a stereotype that's blown up. So when you think of specialty coffee, you think of like the white guy in the beard and the plaid shirt and the suspenders. And I was just like, that's not me. And that was why I started the chocolate barista, because that's not me. And I wanted to show people a view into that world from my perspective. So this is, you know, these are the outfits I like to wear to work. It's like I used to like dress nice to work. And it's just like look cute all the time. And people would be like, you are dressed way too nice for this coffee shop. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm wearing brand new sneakers. Like, I'm just going to wear them. And it's like, I still like, you know, the music that I like. I don't, you know, coffee did help bring me to the Talking Heads. Thank you. Love them. But I also like Rihanna and Migos and like all these other, you know, hip hop and rap, and like to wrap that into all of it. But like my route of what I do in coffee is very different than a lot of other people. So I just wanted to show that off. But it's still, you know, something that isn't mainstream. Like, a lot of people still outside of the coffee industry don't know that people like me exist in it. So it's like, how can I be a bridge? How can I, you know, show that it doesn't have to be so white? It doesn't have to look this specific way. You can come in and do your own thing. Like, I still don't know how, but I've managed to carve out my own space within the coffee industry.
You are unique.
I am extremely unique. But, you know, whether it's if someone wants to come in and like do the same thing where they carve out their own space, or if someone just wants to come in and be a barista or a roaster, like I want to make sure that they can come in and have the same opportunities as everyone else. Be able to, you know, have the same learning resources, have that information shared with them, opportunities to go to Origin if they want to, go to these other industry events and like network. Like, they're all so important to someone's career development within it. Or if you just want to be a consumer and just not have to feel bad about going to a coffee shop and not know what's on the menu, like, that's fine.
That's why we need those flashcards.
And that's why we're getting the flashcards.
Because even, you know, there is so much confusion. And the few times I have worked the register, when someone's like, I want a cappuccino, but no, I want it in that cup. You know, because like the cappuccino paper cup's kind of small, and the latte one's bigger, and people think it's like a size. Like, no, I want a large cappuccino,
right?
You know, so, and you don't want to be the jerk who's like,
that's like, that doesn't exist. That's a big latte, ma'am.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, because you are in the customer service business, you want to educate gently,
right?
So I watched, you know, when you and I started talking a few months ago and I'd watched the YouTube video, one of my big takeaways was, I forget which of the people on your panel said this, but it was about sharing information.
Oh, that was D.
It was D.
Yeah.
And just how, you know, information is not passed down. And mm-hmm. you and I were talking at lunch about how it's not just information. Like when you look at so many reasons people have been held back, it has to do with inherited wealth. You know, you look at the mm-hmm. statistics about home ownership and if your parents owned a home, mm-hmm. what that means for you. And I just started thinking about inherited wealth and inherited knowledge the same way. Mm-hmm. Like what is being passed down
right.
and inherited? Mm-hmm. And if we're not sharing information on how to do things, if we are guarding that information,
right.
that's just as bad.
Exactly. Something that the industry, in my opinion, is sort of having an issue with right now is I feel like we're going to find ourselves stagnating sooner than later. And like we have a lot of very pressing issues to deal with, like climate change and how that's affecting coffee production, coffee producers and farmers themselves and their livelihoods. And like the sea price has gone below a dollar. So it's like we have
what's the sea price?
The sea price is like the baseline price for coffee okay. that isn't specialty prides itself in paying more than that. Usually double or more. And even like fair trade organizations pay at least that, but try to also pay more than that. But it's now dropped below a dollar, which is under the cost of production. So it's like we have all these issues that we're trying to figure out and solve the problems for. And I feel like we have had we've definitely had the same type of people in the positions of trying to solve these problems for a really long time. And I'm like, you know, we've just kind of been running around, like everyone's asking the same questions and we're getting the same answers. And we now need to start opening up the floodgates to let other people come in to offer their experiences, their knowledge to the situation, different types of people to help us solve these problems. But before we can even get there, we need to get just like some of the most basic information to them first. We need to teach them like what's going on and help build their path so that they can get to that point to help us solve problems. And we haven't been doing that as an industry for a long time. And like in the last few years, now that these problems are being brought up, people are more aware of it. So we still, like, I feel like we'll get going and it'll start to come. But I'm like, we need to do this now.
Wow. Do you have a specialty drink?
I can make one up. Every time it came time for competition and it was like, oh, I have to create a signature drink, I always did it last minute. And it always tasted great. But it was like the first time it competed, I hadn't tasted my signature drink until after competition was over. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I just put these ingredients together and hoped it worked. It's like I knew what the espresso tasted like and like built everything else off of that. But yeah, I can come up with something.
What is your signature drink in terms of what you order when you go into a shop?
Well, in Australia, I order flat whites all the time.
You do?
I love flat whites, but flat whites there are equivalent to like going to like Toby's Estate and getting a cappuccino. Like it's like the American like 8-ounce cappuccino or 6-ounce cappuccino. It's the same thing. Otherwise, I'm just like a black coffee person, like whatever's on the pour over bar or something special or drip coffee.
You're true to your brand.
Yeah. I like to be low maintenance.
Are you gonna go back to Australia?
So yeah, I'll be back in Australia in 6 weeks, okay. in the middle of November, and then I'll only be there for maybe 2 months tops, okay. before I move back here.
And then we get you back.
And I don't know where I'm gonna move to yet.
Wow.
It's still up in the air.
Okay.
We'll see.
Well, very exciting. The last thing I have to ask about is because you are the third guest in a row who has tattoos.
Oh.
And I would love to know what those two tattoos are all about.
This is 2 of 3. I have a big one on my shin. But this one is a matching one with my best friend. I got it right before I left Phoenix. And it's just a cactus and a little sunset going into the mountains. And then this one is a dagger going into a heart with my last name, Johnson. It's my maternal family name, and it's sort of like a memorial to my aunt and my grandfather who both died of heart attacks. So, yeah. And aww. Then the tattoo on my shin is a cardinal on a prickly pear cactus because I'm born and raised in Virginia. It's our state bird. And then I didn't realize that cardinals are also huge in Arizona because that's their football team. So someone was like, oh, you must really love Phoenix. I was like, oh, I didn't think this through.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
I was like, I should have got a dogwood flower or something else to represent Virginia because the cardinal's not it.
Oh my God. I mean, that's an intense tattoo on your inner arm.
But it's my favorite one.
Were you close with your aunt and your grandfather?
I was very close with my grandfather, even though he died when I was young, but I still have like very fond memories of him. And like my aunt she was the youngest in the family, and she was just fun. She was fun. She was cool. She, when I first moved to Phoenix and like started doing all the coffee stuff, she used to just write on my Facebook and was super encouraging. And yeah, I miss her. But yeah, I need more tattoos though.
Well,
I don't have a coffee tattoo yet.
Not yet, not yet. Well, that one is a beautiful memorial. So, Michelle, you are a busy gal, so thank you for taking the time and
absolutely
come to see us. I'm thrilled we finally got to meet in person, and you've been a great pen pal. Glad we got to connect and kick ass with all your Black Coffee events.
I'll be back soon.
Awesome. Bye. That's it for our show. A huge thank you to Michelle Johnson. It was amazing to chat with her about all things coffee, and I can't wait to see what she does next. Make sure to follow her on Instagram at The Chocolate Barista and keep an eye out for future Black Coffee events. Don't forget, Radio Cherry Bomb is on the road as part of our Future of Food Tour brought to you by Kerrygold. We will be in New Orleans on Sunday at the Ace Hotel with some very special guests. And then on December 1st, we will be at Book Larder in Seattle. Tickets for both are on sale right now. You can go to cherrybomb.com or go to booklarder.com. A thank you to our sponsors, Vital Farms Pasture-Raised Eggs, Bob's Red Mill, and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School. Thank you to our associate producer, Jess Zeidman, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. This episode was recorded at The Wing in Dumbo. For more information, go to the-wing.com. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.